Hello again, everybody, and welcome to English Digest. Today is January 27th. That's right, we're nearing the end of the month of January. So here we are with one of our last units for the month. Now, we're going to talk about an interesting story here in this last unit here in the month. And we're basically going to be talking about the city of Rome. That's right, it's Rome in Italy, and we'll learn a lot about the history of Rome and some of the mythology that surrounds this city. Now, we'll talk about what mythology means in just a few moments, but first, let's find out who's here in the studio.
Hello, everyone. I'm here, Angie.
And I'm here as well, and I'm Bill. Well, Angie, like I said, we're going to talk about some of the mythology that surrounds this ancient city of Rome. So Rome, as I said, also is in Italy, and it's really famous because it was the capital city. It was the center for one of the very first civilizations on the planet, right?
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't know much about mythology, so this will be really interesting.
Yeah, well, mythology, of course, as we'll find out, it's basically old stories, old legends and myths about maybe how civilizations came together or how certain things came to be true. Usually, as we'll discover today, myths and mythology have elements of magic and gods and things like that in them. But basically, what I was talking about is that Rome here, the city in Italy, well, that used to be the capital city of the Roman Empire. So we're talking about quite a long time ago, about the same time that you also had people in Greece and then also people in China developing these really big civilizations. In fact, I think that old Chinese civilizations had been going for quite some time when the Roman Empire developed. But the basic idea is that this is one of the first real big cities and nations, big countries, where people lived together and spoke the same language, built cities, and studied and did arts, all this kind of stuff in the world. And here we're going to learn some of the stories that surround this city. Well, why don't we go ahead and read through the article then and find out what this is all about. And let's see, I think that today being the 27th, and I myself am 33, which is exactly 6 years more than 27, that I'll be the one that reads the article. That meant absolutely nothing. I was just trying to come up with a good reason. Okay, well, here's today's article. Romulus, the mythological founder of Rome, had a problem. There were not enough women in the city. The Roman ruler appealed to the neighboring Sabines for wives, but they refused to give up their daughters. The king was undeterred. He threw a great feast and invited the Sabines. The Sabines suspected nothing as they sat down to eat. The king signaled for his troops to make their move. At once, the troops rushed through the crowd, seized the young women, and dragged them out. The maidens screamed and fought against their captors, but it was no use. Their parents fled the city, vowing revenge on Rome. What the Sabine people didn't know was that Rome was being watched over by a god named Janus, whose temple was near the gate to the city. One night, the Sabines climbed the hill where Rome sat and gave chase to Romulus's men who were outside the city. The men ran inside and tried to shut the city gate behind them. Alas, the gate would not close. Just as the Sabines reached the open gate, Janus shot a stream of hot water out of his temple, which swept the Sabines away. After that, the door to Janus's temple was always left open in times of war so he could protect Rome. The symbol of Janus is a door that swings both ways. This indicates that he can see both the past and the future. Janus is considered the god of beginnings and the keeper of the gate. For this reason, the Romans named the first month of the year after Janus. Today, we call it January.
Wow, so that's where it came from. I didn't know that. Okay, well, Romulus, the mythological founder of Rome, had a problem. What is a mythological founder?
Well, remember, I said that a myth is an ancient story, usually about a place or a people. Very often, one of the first stories that a civilization or a lot of people living together will come up with. And usually, the reason they create these mythologies and these myth stories is that they want to help explain how something came to be true. So, if Romulus was the mythological founder of Rome, then he's the person who founded Rome in the myths, in the mythology stories. And again, like I said, myths and mythology usually have some ideas of magic and gods and the supernatural to them. And of course, as we'll find out through today's story, there's a lot of kind of magical things happening. Now, a founder, of course, like I said, is a person who first sets up a city. He's the first person to create the city of Rome, even though he's a mythological person. But he had a problem, just like you said, Angie. So what was the problem?
There were not enough women in the city.
Wow, that is a problem if you live in Rome and you're a young guy that likes women.
The Roman ruler appeared to the neighboring Sabines for wives, but they refused to give up their daughters. Well, I can understand that. If I was a parent, I don't know if I would feel so comfortable about giving up my daughter.
Especially to the Roman rulers. Well, so what happened is, this guy Romulus, remember, he's the ruler and the founder of Rome in the mythology. He went and he asked some other people. He appealed to them for wives. Now, when you appeal to someone for something, you're basically asking them to do this thing for you. So if you appeal to the neighboring Sabines, the Sabines that live next to you, for wives, you're asking them for wives. So he was saying, hey, why don't you send all of your beautiful young daughters over to our city, and, you know, then we can have wives and get them pregnant and have families. That's okay, isn't it?
Well, at least the Roman ruler wasn't demanding the neighboring Sabines. That's much stronger than appealing to. To appeal to is at least asking.
That's true, but what happened when he appealed to the Sabines for their daughters, for wives?
Well, they refused to give up their daughters.
No, so just like you said, they didn't want to give up their daughters either. Well, the king is sitting there thinking, now I really need some women in my city, and those Sabines over there, wow, they're really good looking. I know that my young Roman strapping young men will really like those Sabines, so what can I do? Well, he was undeterred, so what he said was, well, I'm not going to let this stop me. When you deter someone from doing something, you stop them, or you give them a reason to stop. For example, if someone was trying to break into your house, maybe you could deter them by using a burglar alarm. It makes a really loud noise, and they'd want to run away, not be there. In fact, something like that, an alarm, is called a deterrent because it makes people stop doing that. Okay, well, if the king is undeterred then, what do you think that means?
It means that he didn't let that stop him. He didn't let the fact that the Sabines refused to give up their daughters stop him. So he threw a great feast and invited the Sabines.
That's right. So he said, okay, you think I'm not going to get your daughters? Well, watch this. And he had a great party, a great feast. Now that's when you have a lot of food and you invite lots of people to come over and everyone's eating and drinking and singing and having a great time. That's a feast, kind of like what you would do at Thanksgiving or maybe even Chinese New Year here in Taiwan. You can have a big feast and invite people over. Ask people to come over and eat with you and celebrate that feast with you. That's exactly what he did with the Sabines. Okay, so did the Sabines come over for dinner?
Looks like they did. They suspected nothing as they sat down to eat. If you suspect something, you think that something's going to happen, or you think something is happening. You don't know for sure, but you suspect. So the Sabines suspected nothing was happening, and they sat down to eat.
Yeah, so in other words, they had no idea that anything bad was going to happen. They just thought they were there for a party. Well, they sit down to eat. And what happens? The king signaled for his troops to make their move. So just think of that. This king's up there and he's got wine in one hand and he's saying, a toast to my neighbors, the Sabines. Thank you for coming to my great feast here. And with the other hand, he makes some kind of a signal. Now a signal, well, that's something that shows you something to be true or kind of shows something important. For example, on the back of your car or on the back of a motorcycle, you have a brake signal. It shows you when you are stopping by lighting red. So the king did something with his hands, and his troops saw this, and they knew, oh, that signal means we need to make our move. But troops here, well, that's a very special word. Who are the king's troops?
Troops are usually military men, people in an army, people that are ready to fight for their country. Those are usually troops.
Oh, so in this case, he's telling the soldiers it's time for them to make their move. That's a great phrase, too. Make your move. When you do this, the idea is you have a plan, you know you're going to do something, but you're waiting for the right time. And then when it's time, you make your move. For example, one way I know that people will use it a lot, younger people in North America, is they'll talk about dating, right? Like, maybe someone will say, so, hey, Angie, you know that guy, that climber guy that we met that's really good looking? Now, I know you said you want to go out with him, but have you made your move yet?
Exactly, Bill. If I want to make my move, it means that I should act on it, that I can talk about it all I want, but at some point I need to act. I need to make my move.
Right. So in other words, I'm asking Angie if she's asked him out or called him or something like that. Okay, well, at once, the troops rushed through the crowd, seized the young women, and dragged them out. So the king told the troops, all right, it's time. Let's do the plan. Make your move. And right away, the troops, all these soldiers, they ran through the crowd. They rushed. When you rush, you move very fast. And they seized the young women and dragged them out. And when you seize someone or something, you grab it. You take it very quickly, and you take it with a very strong hand so it can't get away. And then they dragged them out, so they pulled them out. Well, did these young women want to be taken away?
No, Bill. The maiden screamed and fought against their captors, but it was no use.
Now, we use the word maidens here, and that just means the young ladies, basically. And they basically fought against their captors, but it was no use. Now, when you fight against someone, that just means you fight with them. That's the person that you're fighting against. Because against, remember, it kind of puts two things in opposition, right? Like one's pushing the other and they both want to win. So in this case, that's who you're fighting with. But who are these people? Who's the captors?
Well, the captors are the Romans, the troops, the people that want to have the maidens for themselves. But Bill, I have a question. Does a fight against always have to be physical?
No, of course not. It can be any kind of fight that you need to fight. So an argument could be something that where you could say, I fought against him when we were arguing. Now, you said that the captors here are the Romans. There's a specific reason for that, of course. A captor, that is someone who has captured you or taken you or seized you, right? So a captor, again, that's the person who has taken you. So, they fought against these Romans, but it was no use. In other words, trying to fight, well, it wasn't useful. It didn't help them at all. Now, what happened next? Their parents fled the city, vowing revenge on Rome. Wow, our story's getting pretty intense here. We've got these young maidens that have been taken by the Romans. Good for the Romans. And then we've got the parents who've run away from the city, and they're vowing revenge on Rome. Hey, wait a minute. Vowing revenge on Rome. Now, that can't be a good thing.
Vowing revenge is definitely not a good thing, Bill. It usually means when someone does something against you, something to harm you, you want to get them back. You want to harm them back.
Right. When you revenge or take revenge on someone, it means that you hurt them for something they did to you. So the parents of these maidens, they ran away from the city saying, oh yeah, you took our daughters, man, but we'll be back and we're going to make you sorry. Something like that, right?
Right, Bill. That's funny. The parents sound like surfers.
Yeah, they may not have said it that way. I was just being silly. They probably were actually speaking in Latin, which was the language they used back then. But you know what? We don't need to talk about Latin here because this is English Digest, not Latin Digest. Well, here we are at the end of our second paragraph. This is a great place to stop because, you know, now we're so full of interest and mystery. What's going to happen? The Sabines have left the city. They're going to take revenge on Rome. And all of these young maiden daughters that are just so upset because they've been seized by the Romans. What's going to happen to them? Well, we're going to have to wait until after the break to find out. So I hope you all stay with us. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Welcome back to English Digest. Bill and I are talking about a story about maidens fighting against captors and parents trying to save them. Well, let's find out what happens.
That's right. Remember, we're talking about the mythological founder of Rome, the King Romulus. And he wanted some women in his city, so he went over to the Sabines, the neighboring city, and he took all their daughters. Now the parents have left the city of Rome, and they say, "We're going to take revenge on you, Rome. We're going to come back and hurt you." Well, here in the third paragraph, we continue our story. Now, what the Sabine people didn't know, remember, these are the parents that fled the city vowing revenge. What they did not know was that Rome was being watched over by a god named Janus, whose temple was near the gate to the city. So, they didn't know that this god watched over the city. And what does it mean when you watch over something?
Means that you're keeping it safe, that you're making sure that it doesn't go anywhere, that you don't lose it, you're watching over it.
And you're also basically protecting it. You know, many old cities would have a god that was supposed to watch over the city and keep it safe. Now, here the god is named Janus, and he has a temple, or, you know, a place where you could go worship that god that's near the gate to the city. Well, one night, the Sabines climbed the hill where Rome sat and gave chase to Romulus's men who were outside the city. So remember, they were really mad and they left saying, "We vow revenge on Rome." And they left and then they came back and they thought, "We're going to sneak in the city and kill everyone because they took our daughters." Well, they climbed up the hill because Rome sits up on top of a hill. And we use that word sit to say where the city is, right? This is where you find it. They climbed up to the top and they gave chase to the men who were outside the city, Romulus's men, so the king's guards there. Now, when you give chase to someone, it just means that you attack them and then you start chasing them. You run towards them and they run away and you're trying to catch them. So these people were outside the city. The Sabines were chasing and trying to kill Romulus's men. Romulus's men ran inside the city and tried to shut the city gate behind them. So they were just trying to be safe. But what happened? Were they able to get the gate closed?
Alas, the gate would not close, which means the gate wouldn't close for some reason. Who knows why?
Yeah, and this word alas, that means, you know, unfortunately, or oh no, this is so sad, but this is true. It gets a great word. You know, not many people use it that often in regular conversation, but if you throw it in every now and then, it might be kind of fun. For example, let's say Angie and I are hanging out talking about the night we had last night, and Angie tells me all about this date that she had with this really cool guy who climbs, and I tell her all about this movie that I went to see, but then I say, "But alas, the film broke at the end of the movie, and so I didn't get to see the end."
Or if I were to go on this date and I get all excited about hanging out with this new person, but at the end, alas, it doesn't look like we'll be going out again.
Okay, so it just means unfortunately. They couldn't close the gate. They couldn't stay safe. But just as the Sabines reached the open gate behind these men, behind the soldiers, Janus shot a stream of hot water out of his temple, which swept the Sabines away. So the god helped them. You know, when you shoot a gun, you use that word shoot to say that you fire the gun and make the bullets go away. So it's the same idea here. The god shot a stream of hot water out of the temple. So all of a sudden, you have all this hot water coming out of the temple towards the Sabines. And what did it do to them?
It swept them away, which means that they were not technically swept away, like you use a broom to sweep your floors, but it means that they were pushed back. They were pushed away from the gate.
That's right. Technically, you were talking about a broom and sweeping. Think of that action when you sweep on the floor with a broom. You're pushing stuff side to side, trying to clean the floor, and that pushing just kind of moves everything all in a group, all in one direction. It's the same idea. When you're swept away, you would have, in this case, the water hitting all of the Sabines and just pushing all of them away really, really fast. So, what happened here, the basic idea, is Janus the god helped protect Rome by getting rid of the Sabines when they came to attack. Now, after that, The door to Janus's temple was always left open in times of war so he could protect Rome. So this is what the Roman people did. They said, well, Janus will help protect us. So anytime we have a war, we have to leave the door to his temple open because maybe then he can shoot out a stream of hot water and save us from the people that try and attack us. All right, well, there's our little story here about the mythology of Rome. And here we can actually learn how this mythology, talking about Janus and the ancient city of Rome, actually affects us today, here in the fourth paragraph.
The symbol of Janus is a door that swings both ways. Swing, I like to swing. Aren't swings those things that hang down and you sit on them and you can go back and forth?
Yeah, they're on a rope and they maybe hang from something up above or from a tree. And when you sit on it, you can move back and forth really fast. That's basically what swing means. It means that something can bend or move in two different directions, like a door. If you open a door, you could say that it swings out, so it moves towards you, or it can swing in if it moves away from you. In this case, this symbol of Janus is this door that can move both directions. It swings both ways. Now, if it can do that, then I guess you can go in or you can come out, and that's why this indicates that he can see both the past and the future, because it's like saying you can go in one direction or you can go the other direction. You can go to the past and you can see what happens, or you can go to the future and see what's going to happen. So it's just telling us who this god is, right? What does the next sentence explain, or how does the next sentence take this idea and explain it more?
Well, Janus is considered the god of beginnings and the keeper of the gate. So let me get this straight, Bill. The Romans come in, they steal the maidens of the Sabines, and the Sabines try to get their daughters back like any good parents should. And instead, this god, this Janus god, comes and helps the Romans? You would think that the god would come and help the Sabines, but no. Janus, this god of beginnings and the keeper of the gate, decides to help the Romans instead.
And that's why he's known as the keeper of the gate, right? Because he protected the gate there when the Sabines were trying to get in. So this is just who this god is in Roman mythology. He's considered the god of beginnings because he's one of the most important gods, right? So he is the god of when things start and begin. And then he's also the keeper of the gate. Now, when you're the keeper of something, it means that's who you take care of or what you take care of. For example, there's this really famous phrase that it comes from the Christian Bible, and it goes, "Am I my brother's keeper?" And that basically means, am I responsible for the decisions the other people in my family make? It's not my responsibility because it's not my job to watch over them, right? So in this case, it's Janus's responsibility to watch the gate and keep the Romans safe. Well, this is the reason that the Romans named the first month of the year after Janus. Now, when you name something after something, what does that mean?
It's like if you name your son or daughter after, say, yourself or your parents. That's why we have names such as Richard II, Richard III. It means that you were named after someone else in your family.
Oh, of course. I mean, that word after, it kind of tells you something about time, right? When something happens after another thing, it has to happen next. It can't happen before. So if you're named after someone, it means that other person had the name before you. So in this case, the Romans named the first month of the year after Janus. So they said, okay, we've got these 12 months. We need to give them names. Now the first month, it's the beginning of the year. Hey, Janus is the god of beginnings. Why don't we give his name to the first month and then we'll call it January? All right, well, today we call it January just like it says there in that paragraph at the end. So here we have it, why the month of January is called January. It all comes from this story about the Romans and the Sabines and their daughters and the god Janus. It's pretty interesting to learn how this name came about, the mythological beginnings of the name of the month of January, and a little bit about the story of Rome as well.
I don't think I will ever say January the same way again.
Really? Do you mean you're going to say, like, John, you are E? Or do you mean
I mean that when I say it, I'll be thinking of this great story about Romulus and the Sabines.
Oh, you don't mean you're going to pronounce it differently. I was just being silly. I know you didn't mean that. You just mean that you'll be thinking about this story. You know, it's pretty interesting because many things in our society, whether you live in Taiwan or whether you live in North America, South America, anywhere, I mean, even if maybe you lived on the moon, you would think that there are stories that are really old and a part of your society that have something to do with the things we do today. Like in this case, we have the god Janus affecting that are the names of the month that we use in English all over the world. You know, January, February, March, April, all of these names come from something. And here's the first one, January, comes from the god of beginnings in Rome. So maybe our listeners can be inspired to go out and learn some of the other month names, find out where they came from.
Exactly. And I wonder, does that mean that the doors, every door at that time had the symbol of Janus on it?
I get it. It's possible. Maybe all the doors to the temples, to all of Janus's temples, they probably all had that symbol. And then who knows, for the Romans, maybe because he was the keeper of the gate and the god of beginnings, maybe all the doors in Rome would have Janus's symbol on it. And maybe even at the beginning of the month, they'd have a big celebration or a big holiday that celebrated Janus.
The Festival of the Janus.
Yeah, the Festival of January. I think we should have that every month. Well, maybe Festival of January, then February, and then March. And you know what? I'm going to stop naming months because we're out of time. We got to get out of here. I hope you all join us again next time on English Digest. So until next time, I'm Bill.
And I'm Angie.
Goodbye.
Bye.